sometimes you score the goal of the week and then give up two to some guy named Diego, and then we have to figure out what the heck happened. Welcome to Massive Match Day. My name is Chris Landis. I am here with Nathaniel Marhefka. We are brought to you, as always, by our dear friends at the Land Grant Brewing Company, as well as the Old North Arcade, two fine establishments to take in any Crew SC match, home or away. Definitely a good time at the away match. I was not able to make the watch party at Land Grant this past weekend, but I hear a good time was had by all. Nate, where did you take in this weekend's match?
Where did I?
Yes.
At home, because I live in Florida, and frankly, with MLS, there's not that many other options. There isn't a Columbus Crew supporters bar down here in Tampa.
There are a fair number of Crew fans scattered throughout the United States. Maybe one day, we will see Crew SC bars popping up in other locales. I know there are a few Crew fans in Florida. So it was a weird game. We've been saying that a lot this year. Weird game in New England. Crew SC head to Massachusetts to take on the Revs. And they start fairly brightly. Will Trapp plays a peach of a ball over top, and Ola Kamara pulls a rabbit out of his hat to score. It was a really good goal. But then some dude named Diego Fagundes, who has been kind of one of the rising starlets of the league for the past few seasons, he has a couple of goals, and neither one of them are going to be goals Greg Berhalter is too happy about. You're never happy about conceding, but these two in particular were not great defensive plays by Crew SC. Nate, just broadly, what were your thoughts on the match?
Well, I think the two goals for New England, they start with Crew's persistence to play out of the back, right? You know, Crew wants to have a very slow, organized build-up play. It's very methodical. Berhalter has them playing a certain way, and they're going to build up really, really slowly. And that kind of, you know, bit them in the arse in this one, because their persistence to stick to that and not take long balls out of the back led to some big turnovers in their own end. And we saw many times where they struggled to get out of the defensive half. And we saw that in the two goals, right? Where New England put the pressure on, Crew lost it. And then in the defensive transition, Crew weren't quick to jump on it.
Yeah, and you say that, and it is kind of the prototypical Crew failings in this case. But I'm looking at my notes here in front of me from the match. The first 10-15 minutes, one of my notes is, it's a good start for the Crew, Berhalter ball in the best possible way. You know, we talk about Greg, you know, sticking to his guns and sticking to his style. But for the first bit of this game, definitely up until the and including the Ola Kamara goal, Crew SC were having some success. So it wasn't one of those matches where we were getting played off the pitch for the entire time and just couldn't figure out a plan B. It was definitely working for a good deal of the match, or not a good deal, but the start of the match. Where did it start going wrong?
Well, I think you started to play with fire at a point. And
no, we were playing New England.
No. But coming out of the back like that and trying to build play with your center backs, right? It may work 19 out of 20 times, but then that one time out of 20 that it fails, you need to have some type of fail-safe option, right? Maybe it's more men behind the ball. Maybe it is a way for the players to get back in transition, and they lack that. So I think overall, right, they played pretty well coming out of the back. They played well moving through midfield, but it was those few times that it didn't work that New England took those few chances, and they got two goals out of it.
And speaking about transition defense, it's obviously so important in a system like Berhalter's, which pushes the fullbacks wide. And it's been kind of a recurring theme throughout Berhalter's tenure. Early on last season, we were struggling with it a lot, and I was vocally calling it a systemic failure, a systemic issue on the Mothership podcast back in happier times. how much of this systemic issue is the way the team is set up, and how much of it comes down to individual decisions by the players, individual mistakes by the players? Because you can kind of make the argument that the system maybe puts them in a position to get caught out, but still these players have the quality, they shouldn't be getting caught out, because in a perfect world they're making those recovery runs. So how much of it is the system and how much of it is errors from the personnel?
Well, of course it's a mixture of both, right? I do think that it is mostly a systemic issue, and that the system leads to the individual faults, right? Now, this is MLS, and this isn't top Champions League soccer, right? So these guys are going to make mistakes. I mean, you'll see Marcelo occasionally lose the ball coming out of the back for Real Madrid, right? It happens to everybody. But, of course, we're going to see it more here in MLS. Now, I'm not saying that Berhalter's style can't work here. I'm just saying that it may be more liable to fail, right? And you have to put trust in players. And overall, I think they do a great job in his system. Berhalter acclimates him really well. But we see a system where if there's a defense with a high press, the players don't necessarily know how to build out of the back. They don't know how to engage in the transition, because the system may not work for that entirely well. And I don't think Berhalter's system is great at like self-remedying, because he hasn't played in a certain way. And I also don't think that he changes the system enough to adapt to these teams that play the high pressure. So when you're playing out of the back and you're playing a very low tempo ball to your outside back, there's a potential for issues there. Notably, it lets the defense set up. It lets them get in good positions. And it could lead to a potential turnover down the wing, which could lead in a goal-scoring opportunity for the other team. As I've brought this up before, Johan Cruyff's seven deadly sins of football, one of them is a low tempo pass out of the back to one of the outside defenders. And we see that a lot from Berhalter's team.
And that kind of leads into the next question I was going to ask. We talk a lot about the stresses put on the outside backs in this team, because they have a lot of responsibility both offensively and defensively to contribute to the attack, but still obviously the defenders, they have to be back and defend. I want to kind of focus in on what that strain puts, or what strain gets put on the center midfielders because of that. We often see a bad pass from a midfielder to a wing back get us into trouble. We saw Will Trapp turn the ball over and for the first goal trying to dribble out of trouble.
Right.
And then the second goal, Diego Fagundes made a lot of players look silly, but a lot of that could have been negated by Mohamed Abu going into that space that was vacated. So
sure.
How much stress does this system, the wide backs pushing forward, what does that do to the center midfielders, and why have Crew struggled at times with it this year, do you think?
Well, I think it thins the center midfielders out, and it puts a lot of pressure on them to be very perfect. And it might be the most difficult position to play in this system. It requires somebody that's very mobile and somebody who's very, very good in transition, somebody who's comfortable on the ball and is not going to lose the ball in the center of midfield, because in this system, that's very detrimental. I think with Mohamed Abu, I mean, he has not had a stellar start to the season by any means. I don't think he's been horrific, as some people have claimed.
I saw someone call him the worst transfer in Berhalter's tenure. I'm sorry. I can't get behind that.
These comments, Chris, because people...
This was someone I like. This was someone who I like and vaguely respect. So I was a little taken aback by that, because he's good enough to get on the field. We've
sure.
seen guys come
sure.
in and all the hype in the world and they're not good enough to get on the field. So sorry, continue. I just had to throw that out there. I agree he's been bad, but not worst ever bad.
I think part of it is that he's very good at what he knows and the type of style that he played when he was back in Sweden. And with that, he plays, you know, he likes to play a holding midfielder with a midfield triangle. And he doesn't have that in Berhalter's system. So he is playing a little bit out of position. And if Berhalter were to adapt his playing style, I think we would see a big improvement. He's a water carrier. He's not a guy who's going to be a playmaker out of the back. Now, that being said, so but back to my point about, you know, the stressors on these midfield guys. I think I compare, right, we see Mohamed Abu, we see Mo Sayed, Tony Chani, right, guys that all had very, very shaky appearances for the most part for Crew SC, right? They had some games where they were great, some games where they were horrible, and then a lot of games where they were kind of just uninspiring or invisible. And I don't think that those type of players really fit this system well. I think Trapp does a great job, and Archer, because of his mobility and his ability to engage in transition, really helps. And the system requires somebody like that for this midfield to work.
And I guess that begs the question. You named three high-profile players who have all come in the last few years in Berhalter's tenure to play that role, and all three have been, as you said, pretty inconsistent.
Sure.
What does that say about the system and maybe even the scouting mechanisms that are in place? Because, you know, Berhalter's hit a couple of home runs. He found an Ola Kamara, he found a Harrison Awful, but then you have a fair few number of failures out and out, you know, Emil Larsson, Christian Steindersen, Emmanuel Pogatetz, and then you have these guys, you know, like a Mohamed Sayed, who were good, but not great. So I'm just forced to wonder, where is the disconnect? Because obviously Greg has this vision, and he knows what he wants to do, he knows how he wants to play, and there's a big wide world of footballers out there. Why does it seem to be so hard for him to find the right guy for that role? And if it is that hard to find, at what point do you go, well, maybe I need to adjust that role? That's where I'm at.
Well, I think it is, of course, very difficult. It's difficult with the MLS rule set. It's difficult with MLS's current pedigree, with Columbus Crew's budget, salary cap restrictions, etc., to bring in guys that are going to be all around great, right? It's going to be really hard to find. Sometimes you'll find an Archer, somebody who's like really young, extremely capable. But in this league, unfortunately, you have to take risks on players. Not bringing in a ton of guys that are extremely young, high-profile talents, right? You have guys coming through the draft or other means that may be unheard of or untested. So as far as Berhalter's scouting goes, his scouting across the world seems to be pretty good, right? He brings in a lot of guys from Scandinavia. He's brought in some guys from Cruz, I guess, scouting in general seems to be pretty good in South America. However, like you said, it's like these players are good and they were good at their teams. I mean, Pogatetz, for example, is one that sticks out to me because he was, I think, awful, awful, awful when he was here in the U.S. But when he was playing in Germany, when he was playing in Austria, he was really good there. And he was a, I don't want to say top defender, right, necessarily in the Bundesliga, but he was definitely better than average. That's how good he was. But comes here in Berhalter's system, it doesn't work. So maybe there is a disconnect between the scouts and what they tell him, Berhalter, that is, because these scouts identify players that work really well. Maybe they don't fully understand Berhalter's system or the needs. Without being inside that circle, it's hard to say. But as Berhalter, and you're bringing in these guys that don't fit this system because this system is extremely specific and requires a very specific set of players, you have to think that maybe you have to have some leeway there and change some things to adapt to the players. But it's partly style, right? You have guys like Mourinho or Louis Van Gaal, coaches that they have their way of playing. They're not wavering from that. You don't fit my system, you're out. Look what Mourinho did to Schweinsteiger. Look what he's done to Rooney, right? And he says, I'm not changing the way I'm playing. You adapt to this or you're done. Maybe Berhalter's that way. There's nothing I'd say inherently wrong with that. It's just a style. And I think that might be Berhalter's style.
Yeah, I've actually got a piece about this in the works. Should be coming out early next week before the Seattle game, unless things get jammed up with all the coverage of the games in rapid succession. So keep an eye to MassiveReport.com about that, kind of clearing up some of the misconceptions about what soccer tactics are in general and the difference between style and tactic. So for our 17 listeners out there, make sure to check back on that. Nate, do you have anything else to add on the New England game before we swing into our next little bit here?
Not really. I think let's move on to Toronto for the third time this year.
We're going to do a little bit of a grade card first. We're gonna break this up here. We're gonna take a look at Nico Nace, who we haven't really talked about a lot this season because he's kind of flown under the radar. He hasn't been amazing. He hasn't been bad. He's been solid, I think, is the best way to put that. So I'm going to lob some things out at you, and I want you to give them a grade, you know, A, B, C, D, F, etc. We're going to start off first with defensive ability. Where do you have them?
I would say B+.
Okay.
So I think he's been the, I'd say, most consistent defender in this team. I think that this team's defense doesn't really reward individual efforts as far as defending goes. It's more of a team base. But I think overall his defending has been very solid. His marking has been very, very good. I think that sometimes his defensive decision makings aren't great, and that's why I've brought him down to like a B, B plus.
Okay, that kind of rolls into the next little bit here. I was going to ask about decision making. How do you feel his decision making affects the team? Where's he at in that?
So I think defensively, I'm going to have to go with a C- in decision making. I think that comes down to, should he engage in defenders? Should he step up off his line? Should he drop back deeper in coverage? Should he hold his line? Those things in defending, I don't think have been too great. As far as offensive goes, I think his decision making has been pretty good. I would say maybe a B- though. I also don't think it's been great. I think his passing is a great technical ability of his. But,
dude, you're getting ahead of the script again. Passing was gonna be what I.
All right. Well, but his all right. Next.
Next. All right. I forgot to give my grades there. Defending, I'm giving him a solid B. Decision making, I'm giving him a C+. The next question was going to be his passing ability. I'm going to lead on this one because he drives me absolutely insane. His giant Hollywood big switches.
I know. We've talked about this.
The Hollywood ball is what I call it, and it drives me batty. His short passing is fine.
Sure.
But the giant Hollywood ball just drives me crazy. C-.
Yeah. I'm going to go with I'm going to split this up. Technical passing ability is an A. Solid A, right? He's great passing, but his passing decision making, I'm going to go with about a D because of those Hollywood passes. And for those readers out here, I'm going to send you a link on Twitter to read about these Hollywood balls, right? These cross-field passes and how they don't work. And how there's a lot of statistics and research to show it. Anyways, I digress.
All right. Grade. Sorry, boy, I blanked on the word. There was my thesaurus. Next grade, we're going to talk about his versatility. We've seen him play center back and defensive midfielder. Obviously, he's fairly versatile. I'm going to give him a B+ here. He's not Hector Jimenez, but then again, who is?
Sure.
Where are you at with that, and what does that give to the team?
I'm going to say A-, because, he can play midfield. He can play center defense. I think if Berhalter wanted to, he could even stretch him out on the outside back. I'm not saying wing back, but in a more defensive setup like Josh Williams. But having a player like him in Berhalter's system really, really helps. And Berhalter loves these utility guys.
Berhalter does love a utility guy. Josh Williams, another one you mentioned. And so overall, we're gonna kind of all the intangibles included. What's your overall grade for Nico Nace?
So far this season, I would say B.
B. That's about where I'd put him as well. He's definitely been the most consistent Crew SC defender,
right.
And I that's not an insanely high bar, but I think he's as close to a rock to build off of in that defense as we've had in a while. Parkhurst was inconsistent. Wall, obviously, not ideal. So we haven't really had a steady, consistent hand at the back in a while. And, you know, for all the faults the team's had this year, their inconsistencies, it's really hard to not at least acknowledge the improvement that has been made at the back, because overall, it's an improved defense from last year.
Sure, yeah. And, you know, like you said, Nace has been leading the line with that. I picked him as my preseason defensive MVP, and I think maybe even overall MVP, I'm not sure. I think he's
Mr. Miram has something to say about that.
Yeah, absolutely he does. And if I said that, I don't remember, but I'd be off my mark. But Nace hasn't impressed me as much as I expected him to. I think that even last year, he probably did better than he was or has this year. So I would like to see more from him. I'd like to see him cut out these Hollywood balls and clean up things a little bit on the defensive end as far as his decision making goes.
Well, I think that's probably fair to say about a lot of the Crew SC defenders as far as decision making, but I'm encouraged. I hope he's one of the guys who sticks around for a while, because I feel like he could blossom into a real dominant MLS defender if he makes those improvements you were alluding to. So that wraps up grade cards. Go ahead and tweet us your feedback at Glory to Columbus, at Chris Landis, at Massive Report. You can send us all your feedback on that. We're trying to make this a semi-regular thing. If anybody wants to get involved, we would love to hear from you. And with that, we're going to move into this weekend's Trillium Cup decider at BMO Field in Toronto. Third time in the first 2.5-3 months of the season. Series split, one apiece. Crew SC had a comeback win to open it, and then a just really ridiculous collapse late in a game they should have won just a couple weeks ago. And third time's the charm, perhaps, for Crew SC to get a complete performance. And it's really the best chance they're going to have to do so, even though it's on the road. Sebastian Giovinco is out with an injury. Josie Altidore is out with a suspension for yellow card accumulation. And Crew SC have picked up a couple wins on the road this year. They went up to the Saputo and won in Montreal, which is a very difficult place to go and win. Am I crazy for being slightly optimistic about this game?
Yes.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah, so there's no Altidore. There's no Giovinco, which does favor Crew SC, absolutely, because they're missing their two best attackers. But they still have Toussaint Ricketts, and they still have Michael Bradley. And they have, overall, just a, I think, very, very solid team with actually a fair amount of depth, which not many MLS teams can say. And this match is going to be in Toronto.
And that is kind of a big, big key factor, but it's so weird this season. You know, Chris, you have given away games they should have won and won games they should have lost. So it's just really hard to know which Crew SC team is going to show up. I was at training yesterday, and I asked Berhalter how much of your game plan is based on the previous two meetings. And he said you kind of have to throw it out the window for this one because it's a totally different team. You know, no Altidore, no Giovinco. Obviously, there was no Giovinco for the last game, but not having Altidore really does change the shape of the team and changes the outlook of Toronto. And the match being on the road for the Crew obviously changes things as well. He said it's almost a little hard to prepare for a team like that because they're missing two out of their three key cogs. But this is a team that they've beaten before, so it's just there's a lot going on here, and I'm just crazy enough to think this might be one of those ones where they don't look great, where they look scrappy and they kind of have a chip on their shoulder. And I feel like this is going to be an ugly win for Crew SC as opposed to a pretty loss.
Yeah. What worries me, though, is Crew SC getting on the scoreboard against Toronto, because the Toronto defense has been really good. And the Columbus Crew attack has looked a little bit disjoint and have been wasting a lot of opportunities. Sure, there's been games where you've had a Justin Merrim hat trick. And sure, we scored 2 goals against Toronto in the first match. But this defense is going to have all their parts this time around. And it's going to take a really, really good performance from this Crew attack to, I would say, get more than a goal. I think they'll get a goal. Whether or not they get 2 or 3, it is up to if they finish chances or not.
Finishing has been an issue for the last few games in particular. Speaking of having all their parts, yesterday Berhalter spoke encouragingly. He said he thought Artur would be in the conversation. He was training in full, listed as questionable on the injury report still, but he seemed pretty optimistic about Artur. Finley, his words were very, very, it was either really, really, or very, very close. So there's a real shot that Crew SC will be pretty much at full strength offensively for this one as well.
But how do you translate that as far as Berhalter talk goes? Because we've heard all this before, and players have had, you know, a broken tibia, and Berhalter would say, oh, he's really, really close. What he means is he's really, really close to being able to walk.
That is a fair point, fair consideration. I'm not an expert in Berhalterese. I have not been in training as much as our compatriot Patrick Murphy or Andrew Erickson from the Dispatch, but it didn't seem like he was dodging the question. You know, okay. You get, sometimes you'll get one of those kind of non-answer answers. This didn't feel like that, but I'm not an expert, and Greg definitely keeps it close to the vest, as is his want. You know, you don't want to send out any information to the opposition that you don't need to. So they're both still listed on the injury report that came out after training yesterday, so make of that what you will. But there's a chance. Both were in cleats, were training. Training today is a little later in the afternoon because of the travel tomorrow, so not able to get any further update on that. But assuming, let's split the difference here. Assuming Artur is good to go and Finley is not, what kind of impact does Artur make on this team, on this game in particular?
Well, I guess back to what we talked about earlier, he provides Crew SC with better transition into the offense and into the defense. And it's better than Nico Nace in midfield can, and it's better than Muhammad Abu can.
So out of the two, you're given the choice. You either get Finley for this game or you get Artur for this game. You're taking Artur.
Oh, yeah, I'd say for sure.
And that's not a knock on Finley. That's just there's more depth, more quality, waiting in the wings.
I don't want to say competent depth, but the depth that is behind Finley, I think, could be more effective in this match in particular than the depth behind Artur.
Less of a quality drop off, fair to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you see as being the key matchup in this one? If you had to pick one battle here to focus in on, where do you see this game being won or lost?
I would say definitely in the center of midfield. Toronto's and Columbus's midfield is very strong. They both try and pack a lot of numbers in there. And Toronto, I would say, is probably going to be expected to win the midfield battle positionally. And the last time Columbus played against them, they certainly did. They had the positional advantage for most of the game. And I think how Columbus responds to that and how they counter it is going to really determine this game, because Toronto can keep that advantage, and they've shown that they're not too great at taking it that far, because they are actually a little bit better of playing off the wings through their wing backs and their 3-5-2. But how Columbus responds to that and how Columbus can gain an offensive foothold, I think will determine whether this game goes in Columbus's favor or not.
I'm interested to see, before the last matchup with Toronto, and correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm remembering incorrectly here, but they sent out the pre-match lineup graphic as being a back 3/5.
That was incorrect.
That is incorrect. Which match am I thinking of where they sent it out as the back 3-5 and then they actually lined up in the flat 4?
That was the last match against Toronto.
That's what I'm saying. Against Toronto, they sent out that they were going to be playing the back 3/5, but then when they actually came out, they were in that for maybe 5 minutes before switching to the more traditional 4.
Sure.
And I'm interested to see if that Fient is back on, if they actually go to a back 3, or if they kind of just say, no, you're not going to fall for that again. Here's what we're actually doing.
I mean, I think they should, but Berhalter hasn't seemed really to want that. And if they didn't do it in that match, I kind of wonder if they're not going to do it in this match. But then again, you know, Columbus didn't win that match. They only scored a penalty goal and really looked, I think, even though they might have had the advantage in possession for most of the match, I don't think they looked as good as Toronto. So I would like to see the back three. I don't know if we'll see it. And in that match, I don't even know if they started in the back three. I think we were just kind of primed for that because that's what we saw in the lineup graphics.
Who are your three center backs if you send a back three out there? Because you're a little spoiled for choice here because you've seen Williams play in that role, fairly successfully. I think he played pretty well when he's been called upon. And then you have Alex, and then you have Nico and Jonathan. One of those guys has got to sit. Who are you sending out there?
I would send out Nico, Alex, and Jonathan.
I guess not having to worry about Altidore kind of negates some of the hesitancy I would otherwise feel about putting Alex back out there.
Right.
So, anything else to add on Toronto before we get to predictions here?
No, I'm just interested to see how they shape up without Altidore and Seba in the mix. I think that we'll probably see Ricketts playing the front of the line, which isn't something he's done often this year, since he's been really stepping his game up in recent matches. We've seen him in midfield. So I think we'll see him at the top. And I'm also kind of interested to see how Raheem Edwards plays on the wing, because I think he's one of the brightest talents in this league.
That's high praise. I am interested to see if Kruse come out with a little more fire than usual here. Just from conversations I've had at training, they are still bothered by the fact that they let the last game against Toronto slip away. They feel like that's a game that they dominated for 80 of the 90 minutes, and then they let get away from them. Berhalter has brought it up out of the blue. It is something that is still on his mind. It is one... I don't like the term revenge game because every game matters in MLS, but this almost feels like a bit of a revenge game. Berhalter will be back on the sideline as opposed to in the box. And I'm really hoping, almost, I don't like to talk on the show about what I'm hoping to see, but I'm hoping that they come out with a little bit of an edge and maybe a little bit of bite, especially if Artur's back out there. I could see, you know, a little bit of a tone setting possibly early on here. So I'm going to, I feel very strange being all Sunshine Brigade on this, but I can honestly see Kruse coming out with a scrappy, kind of ugly 2-1 victory here.
I'm going to go the opposite, I think. I think I'm going to go 2-1 Toronto. And I know you feel, pretty confident that...
I never said confident. I said optimistic.
Okay, optimistic, right. That, since Altidore and Seba isn't playing. But I think that Toronto's defense is just too good. This is in Toronto, and this is MLS. So away teams always have less of a chance.
It's true.
And what we saw in the last Toronto match, I think, is that right the 40th minute, that's when we saw, I think it was Toussaint Ricketts, came on for Mavinga, Chris Mavinga. And right? They brought on another attacker, took off a defender, and it changed the look of their team. And I think that was kind of the fulcrum point of the match. And I know it was early on. I know Berhalter and the team says that they dominated for 80 minutes. I see it very differently. I see Toronto making that early change and then coming into second half, playing a little bit different stylistically. And from there, Crew didn't make the changes to counter that. And I think maybe Toronto's figuring out how to play against this team, and I don't see Berhalter adjusting to it. So I'm going in the favor of Toronto this one.
It should be noted that Berhalter was not allowed to coach that game. Just to remind that. That's not a slight on Josh Wolf either. You know, he's going to make an MLS team very happy one day in the near future. So, fans, friends, fellow Denzians of the Crooniverse, thank you for joining us again on Massive Match Day. We are brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company and the Old North Arcade. Both will be showing the Crew SC match this Friday night. It is a Friday night kickoff on the CW here locally, MLS Live for you out-of-towners. Get at us on Twitter. I am at Chris Landis, K-R-I-S-L-A-N-D-I-S. He is at Glory to Columbus, or you can reach all of your favorite or least favorite Massive Report personalities at Massive Report. For Nathaniel Marhefka, for the Land Grant Brewing Company, for the Old North Arcade, thank you guys so much for joining us. I am Chris Landis. Everybody, enjoy the match and stay massive. And have a good holiday weekend.